With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. You're with Brian McClain and Timothy Shea and State of the Nation on today's News Talk TNT.
Brian, welcome to State of the Nation on today's News Talk. I'm Timothy Shea. We are live from Texas and New York. Visit us on the web at tntradio.live. It's been a fun day, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. I just finished up a 10-minute hit on the Patrick Henningsen show with Basil Valentine sitting in. And Timothy, I gotta say, I really enjoyed prepping for the show today, even though the news feeds are maniacal and befuddling as usual.
Well, as usual, right? There's a reason you dubbed it the Doom Scroll.
That's right.
It's delicious, though. It's delicious to see CNN hoisted on its own petar. It's now been accused of propaganda spinning with regard to the bombshell story exposing Kristen Clark's lies. And for those that missed it, as CNN reported on the head of the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division, Kristen Clark, and it's drawing accusations that the outlet sought to curry favor with President Joe Biden's DOJ through the framing. Wait a second, Brian. They sought to curry favor through the framing of the Kristen Clark story and not the Donald Trump story. Did I hear that correctly?
Isn't that their mission statement to right? curry favor and to kowtow and be the little, you know, dog that the CIA pets?
Yeah, so Daily Signal published a report on Tuesday that highlighted evidence that Clark had not disclosed an arrest and expungement during her nomination process to the DOJ, and then she explicitly denied ever having been arrested in sworn testimony in response to a question by Arkansas Republican Senator Tom Cotton. And then on Wednesday, CNN published a report headlined, DOJ civil rights leader says she was a victim of abuse. An extraordinary statement. So now, because CNN actually, for once in the last 25 years, reported actual news, now they're guilty of propaganda. Welcome to the club, CNN.
It's delicious, isn't it? Yeah, welcome to the party, guys. I feel like John McClain, not Brian McClain.
Yeah, right? Come to the coast, they said. The weather will be great, they said.
Shoot some propaganda. It'll be a good time.
Yeah, rocking and rolling. Well, I guess it's not May until CNN falls to its death from Nakatomi Plaza.
Happy Beltane, CNN.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think that is where we are, isn't it, Beltane? Good old Celtic. Yeah,
I think we forgot Celtic to mention holidays. It yesterday, but here we are.
Well, yesterday was May Day. I don't think May Day's Beltane, is it?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe we're still looking at Beltane hitting. Is that today?
I honestly don't know. I think we got a shot for Beltane. Yeah, because I think that they, Beltane, Lugnasa, I think they fall on different days. We'll have to look that up. But, Brian, we got to wear armbands, black armbands of mourning, Brian. Moderna.
Good morning.
Moderna, the company that had never gotten a drug approved ever in its history, and then all of a sudden made multiple billions of dollars off of making the mRNA death injections. They've posted a $1.2 billion loss, Brian, because sales of the COVID vaccine are off. I guess people aren't opting for that seventh and eighth booster.
This is what happens when, I don't know, 60, 70, 100% of society in like most of the world knows someone now who's like died of myocarditis or gotten Guillain-Barré syndrome or maybe looked at some of those videos of that squid like stuff they're pulling out of people's arteries that have passed away recently. I mean, that's not good for sales. So, yeah, it couldn't have happened to a more ghoulish company. Now, can we get Pfizer to fall also? And is it really a fall for Moderna, or are they just going to rise again when bird flu becomes the next thing or something? They'll go back to the Pentagon. Can we get some more of that mRNA juice? We'd really like to put it in more people.
Yeah, I think that they're certainly going to try, but I think the whole enterprise, Brian, is going to collapse under its own weight, because we also have very prominent doctors out there, more than one, saying that we are just at the very beginning of the death cycle, and that people, even that got jabbed one time, are at risk of dying suddenly. And I saw a report over earlier this week, it was, that said that people who had gotten jabbed, even just once, have reduced their life expectancy by an estimated 25 years, which is just
Just real quickly here, shout out to Alan Dershowitz. The only way these companies are going to ever get rich on this scheme again is if nasty global governance and technocrats and the WHO do exactly what Dershowitz said to quote unquote anti-vaxxers, and that's hold them down and force a needle into their arm and plunge that plunger. That's really the only way they're ever going to get this kind of buy-in again on their products.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was shocked when Alan said that, because ordinarily he's been pretty clear-headed. I don't always agree with him on political judgments, but in terms of civil liberties, he's usually been pretty good. And that one really shocked me. But you shouldn't be shocked that TNT never goes home, because we're committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7 online globally, no matter what. We've got you covered on TNT.
Clashing on the controversies.
It's a woke society, and I am fed up with it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're going to be introducing our good friend Joseph Lombardi now. Joseph is always someone we go to when we have any sort of financial questions. And Joseph, it's great to see you back on State of the Nation. Thanks for joining us. So where are we at right now with finances? Last time we had you on the show, I pretty much went out and started reorganizing my entire life. So what's big on your mind today?
Yeah, I mean, it's just sad seeing the way the government is decimating its American people. It's from every angle. Inflation is really hurting people. You know, I have to put super in my car. Now it's over $5 a gallon. You know, the stock market's doing jumping jacks, 6 days in a row of losses. It's up, it's down. These major companies are reporting shortfalls. We're seeing 15-20% dips in major industries. We're very sick as an economy, and it's starting to show. You know, the housing's back. People are back on their car payments. Credit card debt is up 47% from where it was 3 years ago. I mean, it's not getting better, and I don't know if they can keep the stilts of our economy up until the election, which is, I think, that's what they're desperately trying to do. And I think it's going to cost them a lot of money, because it's really bad out there right now.
It really is. And StubbleBum Joe did something today that few thought possible, Joe. He united protesters on both sides of the Arab-Israeli war at the University of Alabama, who at one point in the proceedings joined in a call and response chant of F Joe Biden. And neither side was saying F. So if he's done nothing else, he's united people of all political persuasions in agreeing that his economy is just dismal. So what does this mean for Democrats up and down the ticket this November?
I think they're trying to play a part to let Trump win the election. And that would make most Republicans, including myself, very happy. Except I do feel like it is going to be a trap. I feel like they are going to tank the economy a month or two after they allow, because, you know, our votes don't really matter, in my opinion. They allow Trump to win, who should have won the last election, in my opinion. So I don't know how they're going to do it. They're going to have to keep having to call by calls, which are option contracts. It's pretty much all they've been doing. You know, they keep the gold and silver industry down by calling puts. That's why silver isn't $1,200 an ounce. It's $25. So the stock market has been totally manipulated to the point where it even makes crypto look on an equal pale with our SEC regulated stock market, if you believe it or not.
Yeah, it's just incredible. Well, go ahead, Brian.
Mm-hmm. No, I absolutely do. I believe it. The market seems to be completely held up by policy and by the Fed, and we're just watching them spend so much money. I mean, I every day when I look at the news feed and I see, you know, places that need support, you know, foundational pieces of our society, our infrastructure, our economy, our, you know, civil life that need massive financial support. And then, you know, I just think, well, gosh, these people on Capitol Hill don't seem to care. They voted pretty much in lockstep to spend $100 billion. I guess they call it $95 billion, just so people like me will look bad when I call it $100 billion. But what's $5 billion amongst governments? You know, it's just so depressing to see that much money going into, you know, foreign countries while ours is falling apart.
It's pretty much the MO. It's what they are designing to do, is to destroy the head of the snake in our globe. I mean, you take a look at a superpower. We were the superpower, winners of World War I, winners of World War II, nuclear family, hardworking immigrants came in and worked hard. There was nothing free. Nothing was given to my family that were immigrants, one from Hungary, one from Italy. And, you know, they had to work and grind and grow and learn, go through pain to grow. I mean, look at a muscle. In order for it to grow bigger, you have to rip it apart. And that's how it is with most things. And our world is getting so soft. And it's really sad with how our educational system is. It's really sad how people have to buy a mortgage just to go to college, which they don't teach you much. What gender you are and you know, maybe what nose ring shape to put in your nose. But it's really sad. I'm seeing it. People, you know, I just interviewed somebody from Quinnipiac recently, university, and wanted to intern at my company. And I'm asking very simple questions, and he didn't know the answers, and it's not his fault. I even told him that. I said, it's not your fault. I said, your government has failed you. The educational system has failed you. You bought into a failed, dead educational system. And it's not looking good if you take a look at what is going on in every facet of our economy. And what can you do is just plan and plan and plan to have a plan when, not if, this system crumbles. And it's I don't want to be the doom and gloom guy, but when everything you look at is not healthy, how can you expect our economy to stay afloat?
It's absolutely right. People do need to plan to plan. And young people, my heart breaks for them, because you're 100% correct. They have been utterly failed by their teachers in high school, by their professors in college. It's just been one failure that they've experienced after another. The people now that are getting their graduation stolen from them had their graduation stolen from them in high school 4 years ago. Things are not looking good, which is why people should go to ironhawkfinancial.com and find out how Joe can help you. And Joe, we're really happy about your good news. You're going to be able to give a lot more people a lot of great advice soon, aren't you?
Yeah, I just got chosen to have my own radio show, you know, satellite, global, similar to TNT. And I am very, very, very excited to get this information out, because a lot of what I know is suppressed on purpose. They want you in government-sponsored accounts, IRAs, 401ks, SEP simples. Why has any of your listeners ever seen an investment commercial? But you've seen a commercial for cigarettes. You've seen a commercial for alcohol. You've seen commercials for deadly jabs promoted by your favorite celebrity. But you don't see commercials on how to budget, on how to save, what investments you know, are, how they work, what tax codes are. And it's all by design. They make 401ks and IRAs easy so that you just check the box out of your paycheck. You already have FICA, Medicare, unemployment, Social Security coming out of your paycheck. Why not just take some more and throw it in a 401k you can't touch for 30 years, where Wall Street takes half of your money in fees, and then the government takes half of your money in taxes when you absolutely need the money in retirement, especially when we're dealing with inflation. So the system is designed that the group herd mentality will fail. And you have to be a lion. You have to take control of your financial finances. And if you don't, unfortunately, you're not going to be able to retire. And that's called the welcome to Walmart strategy. And unfortunately, a lot of people in their 70s or 80s are living that strategy today.
Well, even in their 60s, I mean, ever since I was a teenager, Joe, I never had an expectation of getting a dollar out of Social Security. It's just how I've lived my life. Folks, we're going to have to leave it there with Joe Lombardi, but go to ironhawkfinancial.com and check out Joe's new show on Bushwood Media Group. Joe, thanks so much. Can't wait to talk to you again right here on State of the Nation.
Thank you, Timothy.
We've got more State of the Nation right after this word from today's news talk, TNT.
TNT's David Curtin.
Rishi Sunak is being threatening that he will do this and saying, oh, we'll do this, we'll come out of the ECHR, that is, not anything else. But he hasn't done so. And then he say, well, if we're elected in the general election this year, which is highly unlikely, then we may come out and we may give notice to come out if we're re-elected in 2024-2025. By that time, another year or 2 years will have passed, and another 100,000 or so military-aged men will have crossed the channel in small boats with not a single flight taking off to take some bogus asylum seekers to Rwanda.
David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Not see it coming. It's pre-diabetes, and it captures one in three adults. You may not even know you have it, but you can escape. Take the 1 minute pre-diabetes risk test to know where you stand. With early diagnosis, you can change the outcome and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Be your own hero on smartphones everywhere at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Ladies and gentlemen,
today's news talk.
News and information.
TNT Radio.
All right. Well, you know, we still cannot believe this whole FISA thing, this whole 702. It's just amazing, especially in the wake of what we've seen coming out. Just scandal after scandal, weaponization after weaponization, as the government tries to pass more and more and more legislation. And this is not just here in the United States. You look at Canada, you look at New Zealand, you look at Australia, you even look at Poland right now. Poland is looking at making it illegal to have any sort of harsh criticism of LGBTQ people. How do we bracket these categories of people? Why is that necessary when we already have legislation and laws to keep people safe and maintain equality? I thought that's where we were headed as modern nations. But no, we need to apparently create special classes. And joining us now to discuss is the CPO of BitChute, our friend Amy Peekoff. Amy, you know, we've talked about this before, these insane, absolutely insane hate speech laws. And, you know, during the break there, Timothy made the brilliant comment that this is all turning into a barrel of monkeys situation. Mm-hmm. You look at the FISA thing going on, 702. You look at all these bills and legislations that
TikTok
I'm talking
ban,
about.
TikTok ban, right?
And then the TikTok ban. I mean, it all right. Dovetails. Where are you at with all this right now?
So I think the last time that I spoke with you since then, the authoritarians have done what I would call a hat trick, right? So first of all, they managed to get an expansion and reauthorization of FISA Section 702. And it's something that should have been limited, more limited in scope with, say, a warrant requirement or something, but instead it's been expanded in a way that it's never been before and reauthorized. Then we had this TikTok ban. So our Congress critters have banned an entire website and app without any sort of due process, not even as a standalone bill, but they sandwich that ban right in between this foreign aid bill, you know, trying to help Israel and Ukraine. Whatever you think about those things, I submit that it's very wrong to sandwich a TikTok ban right in the middle of that piece of legislation. And then finally, I don't know if you saw this one, we have the FCC reinstating net neutrality, which under the Trump administration have been removed. Net neutrality is essentially telling internet service providers how to do what they do. It's creating more entanglements between government and the technology that gets us all online, gets us all communicating with each other, sharing information, et cetera. So the authoritarians have been really at it lately. And then in the break, you mentioned something about OAN, that they're going after OAN now for misinformation as well.
Yeah, it certainly appears that way. I'm still kind of learning about this story, but I noticed that Tucker Carlson was on there on his show recently, TCN on X, and talking about how the Democrats are working to shut down news organizations all over the country, actually, with these tactics, you know. But he's talking about how they're kind of moving, going after One America News, OAN now. And that looks particularly scary. And why are they doing it? Well, because disinformation, I guess. That's what they're saying. They're saying that journalism can be disinformation, which is pretty rich coming from government agencies that peddle that for a living, peddle that as a means of campaigning.
They want a monopoly on it, right? They want a monopoly on disinformation. Nobody else can be peddling that stuff. You know, recently I was thinking about the push against disinformation, connecting it to the hate speech laws and other sort of measures to try to go after hate speech online that you talked about earlier. Both of these, as I see them, are side effects of engagement enhancing algorithms. And you could just throw conspiracy theory right in there. I mean, really, conspiracy theories might be an offshoot of the disinformation issue. But the engagement enhancing algorithms have the effect of putting us all into bubbles where our worldview is reinforced. And so, for example, maybe you could not imagine, if you were a Trump supporter, that Joe Biden might have gotten as many votes as he did in 2020, and you would be more likely to believe a stolen election theory if you are being put into a bubble where everybody makes it seem inconceivable to you that anyone would vote for Joe Biden. I'm seeing campus demonstrations that show me that it's quite conceivable that many people might vote for Joe Biden, right? Sometimes we get these facts, but I think they should start looking at least normatively at those algorithms as the source of a lot of the problems. But instead, what is everybody doing? They're saying, no, you have to censor disinformation. You have to censor hate speech. I'm not necessarily saying that the government needs to prohibit algorithms, but I think normatively we should look at them. And government could look at them through a lens of existing law, such as fraud or consent. You know, do you actually consent to certain types of addictive algorithms, et cetera?
Yeah, because these algorithms are creating a reality like Pauline Kael, the film critic for The New Yorker magazine, lived in the Upper West Side when, after Richard Nixon's landslide victory in 1972, she exclaimed, "Nixon couldn't have won. I don't know anyone who voted for him." Well,
yes,
both of those things are true. Nixon won, and no, you didn't know anybody because you were living in an echo chamber. And that's what they're trying to get people, is isolated into echo chambers on both the left and the right. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist, Amy, but I am a pattern recognition expert. And here's what I see. I see Section 230 of the 1996 Telecommunications Act that protects online platforms from liability, provided they only act as conduits and not as publishers that express viewpoint discrimination. Well, they're getting the benefit of the Section 230 safe harbor protection, and yet they're still acting as publishers by censoring people like you and me and Brian and everyone else who has lost accounts on Facebook, X, etc. Now OAN, right, they're going after. So you've got Section 230 on the one hand. You've got Section 702 of FISA on the other. You've got the CARES Act, which in the 1986 Vaccine Protection Act that allowed Big Pharma to escape liability. You've got the government working piecemeal, one issue at a time, to create this reality where anybody can do anything to we the people and no one can be held liable for it. Am I crazy or is this really, am I seeing what's happening?
Yeah, I mean, and I could tell you from, you know, there's a lot of us who were mourning what happened with the FISA Section 702. And Edward Snowden in particular was talking about the difficulty of mounting legal challenges in the courts to government overreach like this, because you try to do it and they'll challenge you on standing. Or suddenly, if they think you have a good challenge against an existing legal program, they'll tweak it in such a way, or they'll shut it down temporarily so that your case becomes moot. And they don't allow a precedent to be established by a court with any sort of authority that would impede them from, you know, having these sort of measures in the future.
Right. And they're very happy to change the definition of a word at any moment, too, like vaccine or anti-Semitism at the federal level. Isn't that strange? Amy, hold the line. We have a headline we're going to take. We'll come back. We'll pick up right here on State of the Nation. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
And now,
dude, I have huge news.
I knew it. Knew it.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky stated that Ukraine's admission into NATO is contingent on defeating Russia in their ongoing conflict. Polish Defense Minister Kosiniak-Kamysz has called for a unified European Union approach to handling draft-eligible Ukrainian men residing within the EU. Representative Elise Stefanik has requested the Department of Justice investigate Michael Cohen for perjury during his 2019 testimony before the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
You know, Amy, I'm thinking about the algorithms that you're talking about. This our friend and colleague, Hervore Morich, he calls it the algorithm ghetto. And I think that's a really good term for it. And it makes me think of a film that a friend and colleague of mine, Aaron Dykes, and his partner made a few years ago called The Minds of Men. And it's a documentary film. I recommend watching it. It's available on YouTube. It's pretty long. You might have to break it up into a couple of parts. It's like 3 hours and 45 minutes long, but it talks about the history of mind control. It focuses a lot on the MKUltra program, but it goes much further than that because it discusses cybernetic feedback loops. And I think that is another way of describing what we're talking about here when it comes to algorithms. So it's, and the documentary exemplifies just how intense that mind control can be when you're stuck in echo chambers, when there are puppet masters who are, you know, designing what you see, you know, as an individual, what you're presented and how that's different from other people, what they're presented and how it, you know, it feeds on your confirmation bias and your outrage. I mean, it is an insane science, and I think they have it locked down much further than most users would acknowledge or even notice.
No, and I think many of us, that's where I raise this issue of contractual consent. Because, you know, again, if I'm going to look at a problem in the world, chances are there's already a law on the books that you could use to effectively address that problem within the bounds of what should be done. And so consent is certainly something that we could talk about when you talk about a social media platform that is harmful to kids, you know, they've talked a lot about teenage girls and all the harm that has come to them through an Instagram or a TikTok or whatever. And to me, the tool to look at is whether those kids are capable of contractual consent. They're not allowed to go sign a lease for a car at 16 or 13 or whatever. And yet, supposedly, they can you know, consent to be on a social media platform with these algorithms that many people don't understand exactly how they work and how addictive they are and how manipulative they are. So there's that. And, you know, there's also fraud, right? They might say, well, we're not, you know, doing particular things to you. But if they happen to know that their algorithms are doing those things and they're doing it anyway, fraud would be a tool to go after them. I want as little government regulation as possible. I always think litigation, you know, where you handle a problem surgically would be the way to go.
Yeah, I always say that I'd love to see our government trimmed back to constitutional limits. If we had a government that didn't exceed the bounds set for it by the Constitution, I think it'd be a much better world. Unfortunately, the toothpaste is almost completely out of that tube. I don't think we're ever going to see that in our lifetime. So what do you think we can do? Is shutting down some of these agencies, shutting down some of these programs on the table? Or do you think it has to only be done through the courts piecemeal?
So I'm in favor of pursuing all avenues at once, right? So if you are a social media platform like BitChute is that I work for, one of the things that we try to do is as and when we are bumping up against regulatory agencies and other limits on, you know, government limits on our ability to offer the products and the values that we want to offer to people, we want to use those problems, those conflicts as teaching moments, right? If a government tells us to take down a piece of content and we happen to think it's a piece of content that would be protected by the First Amendment of the American Constitution, which normatively we think is correct, then we will say this has been mandated to be taken down by such and such government. And then the people can be educated to vote out the politicians that have instituted the particular regulatory program, et cetera. So use those as teaching moments. There's, of course, developing technologies as a way to get around some of the restrictions on the free flow of information and ideas and just connections with your fellow human being. Decentralization is something that people are pursuing. But of course, governments continue to go after ways to clamp down on that. We've seen that in the financial realm recently. So that's only part of the answer as well. You know, again, electorally, and yes, litigation as well. Try all avenues at once is my idea.
What about subscriptions? If you were to go under a subscription regime, which BitChute allows, can they shut down? Can they shut down a news feed if it's a subscription model, if people have opted in by paying money to subscribe to the information?
I have not seen any distinction that the regulations make between people who pay a membership fee on a social media platform or not. Now, if you could say, well, it's not really open to the public or viewable to the public, it's a private club. But what a subscription will get you on BitChute, for example, is we have recently launched our live streaming feature. And at the moment, the live streaming feature, I think due to the costs of making that service available, we have it restricted to people who have either 100 or more followers on their channel, or have purchased at least the minimum level subscription for $5 a month. And so that it will get you more features, but anybody can go, even if they are not registered at all on BitChute, and view the content that's there.
Yeah, okay, definitely.
So there's no paywall.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a good question, Timothy. I wondered that too. Amy,
but if you have like a private club concept, I could see it, right? Yeah.
Right, yeah. But even there, like, people have been deplatformed at places like Patreon and stuff like that. Like, Patreon's sort of the ultimate platform for setting up your own thing and, you know, but
your own private club, right?
Yep. Right? Yep, but they have their own terms
and
services.
Well, and the government is even going after encryption, which is the ultimate in privacy, having communications with your fellow human beings, and they even want to shut that down. So as I said, technology alone is not going to be enough. We need to push for changes in the law. And I would do that through education so that voters vote a different way, and also through litigation as well.
Yeah. Horrific to think that the state with a capital S would want to take encryption away from people. I mean, it's a fundamental thing on the internet. They talk about preserving people's PII, and then talk about that, talk about outlawing VPNs. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. We've got about a minute left, but I really quickly was wondering if you had a comment on the Australian court ordering Elon Musk to hide the videos of the Sydney church stabbing. I thought that was right in your swim lane. Any quick thoughts on that?
You know, it's going to be interesting to see what the legal challenge that he's mounted against that order comes out to be. But I think he's done a good job of using it, again, as a teaching moment, right? So he said, look, we've complied, we've taken it down, at least blocked it for Australia. And at the same time, we are challenging the order in the courts. So he's educating everybody as to what's the reason that it's being taken down. He's letting everybody know that they don't think that the order is proper, even under Australian law. So I think he's doing a good job with it. And I look forward to hearing how the case turns out.
All right. Excellent. Well, thank you for that analysis there. At Amy Peekoff on x.com. Check out PodShoot and don't let it go over there at BitChute. Amy, thank you so much. Always appreciate your insights.
Thank you very much. And you guys have a good rest of your week.
You as Thanks. Well. And stay tuned because we got more State of the Nation after these words from today's News Talk, TNT.
Here's a bushfire fact. Bushfires can occur without warning. So if you're traveling during bushfire season, here are three simple steps to remember. 1. Check the fire danger rating before you go. The higher the fire danger rating, the more dangerous the conditions. It may be safer to replan your trip. 2. Think about the area you're going to and what you would do if a fire started. How would you escape the area if you needed to? And where would you go? Check if there's a neighbourhood safer place. 3. It's dangerous to drive through smoke or fire. If you can't find a way to avoid the fire, park in a cleared area, face the car towards the fire, and turn the engine off. Then lie on the floor and cover yourself to protect yourself from radiant heat. Live bushfire ready. For more helpful tips, visit myfireplan.com.au today.
She was reading at a second grade level in kindergarten.
Pod forced swimming before she was 7.
Finally convinced mom to get her ears pierced in the 3rd grade.
Came in 2nd at her 5th grade spelling bee.
Drill team in the 7th.
And with one stroke of the keyboard.
One click of the mouse.
It's gone.
It's gone.
It's gone.
Report a cyber tip today.
You're with Brian McClain and Timothy Shea and State of the Nation on today's News Talk TNT.
John O'Connor is an experienced trial lawyer in San Francisco. He served honorably as an assistant U.S. attorney in Northern California from 1974 to 1979 and is the author of Postgate, How the Washington Post Betrayed Deep Throat, Covered Up Watergate, and Began Today's Partisan Advocacy Journalism. John had a front seat to that by representing W. Mark Felt regarding the revelation of his identity as Deep Throat. You can find him on his website at joclaw.com. John, welcome to State of the Nation.
Good to be with you.
Your father was an FBI agent. You were a U.S. attorney, and you've written about how Watergate changed the political landscape in America. Are you surprised by how the media and the government have joined together in attacking Donald Trump? Or are you surprised that they think they can get away with it?
Well, I would have been surprised if I had seen this coming 20 years ago. But in recent years, I realized as I dug into the Post reporting during Watergate, I realized that the Post hid the truth from us, that people of intelligence, good faith, who are paying attention, nonetheless got fooled. And now you then have Russiagate, and you say, how could this happen? Well, we know how it happened. It happened during Watergate. They were just very successful during Watergate. There are many more outlets out there, and there's all sorts of things on the internet from which allows us to puncture some falsehoods. But nonetheless, the media is able to still paint a dominant story, even if many people know it's false. That's what's scary.
And what about the almost real-time factor that we have now? It's like, you know, in the Watergate era, you kind of have, you know, if things were dispersed by newspapers and, you know, television broadcasts, but now it's like things come out instantaneously almost, and we have a serious problem when it comes to propaganda, facts, these sort of things, and it's almost like they can rewrite history as it's unfolding minute to minute.
Well, Winston Churchill said it best. He said, you know, lies get halfway around the world before truth gets its pants on. And that's what we've got. The other thing about it is people who are traditional and conservative, and I say that, I mean really middle of the road, the common sense, the common enlightenment type of folks, they don't act collectively. I don't act collectively. I think for myself and the people I know, if I get 10 Republicans in a room, there are 10 different opinions. That's fine. Whereas there are many people that act collectively, and in our major media, everyone's in lockstep. People coordinate, they talk about this stuff, so boom, there is this barrage of whatever it might be. And every talking point is the same. So you get this barrage of concentrated mainstream media, and it's very hard for a normal person who's got a job, who's got kids, got all sorts of things. You don't have time to pierce through it. You really don't. And it's a very, very strong force. And, you know, that's how you get some sort of an authoritarianism within a democracy.
And it's scary because, you know, it used to be the people on the left that were supporting civil liberties. The American Civil Liberties Union used to support civil liberties. And now, you know, the big lie in politics was that the parties flipped in the 1960s, right? And that the Republicans that got the Civil Rights Bill, Civil Rights Act of 1964 passed, became Democrats somehow. And the Democrats that voted against it became the Republicans, which was complete nonsense. But lately, we've seen an actual flip. It's the Democrats that are acting like the brown shirts, and it's the Republicans largely, there are some exceptions, that are, you know, out there waving the banner for civil liberties.
Well, that's right. My father is a very prominent Democrat in Indianapolis, and he could have been governor. He didn't want to. He had seven kids by the time it was his number was up to do it. But basically, Democrats were lunch bucket people in those days. They cared about the common man. And the Republicans went to country clubs and they ran the big businesses. And that was and never the twain shall meet. Now that's been flipped on its head. And you have the Democrats are now the party of elitists, of the professional class, the professorial class, and so forth, and combined with the underclass that they purport to help. They're not really helping the poor people, but they purport to, and hope that those people are dependent on them. And you have this high-low culture poker, so to speak. But the general person out there in America is now being represented by the Republicans. However, I must say, as a Republican, however inartfully that some of our politicians do it, the fact is that's where the lunch bucket, normal folk, middle class representatives are.
Yeah.
Now,
we John, heard from one of them in New York the other morning.
Oh, yeah, we did. Definitely. John, getting back to Donald Trump, I mean, can you draw some modern parallels for us, perhaps? You know, maybe some of this you saw coming when you saw the backlash against him when he came down that escalator. Did you see it getting this far? And what do you see that's similar?
Well, I didn't see it getting this far, but it's certainly gotten much farther than it did with Nixon. But if you recall, when there was the 50th anniversary of the Watergate burglary, and I think John Dean put on a special for CNN, they couldn't help but interlineate shots of Trump next to Nixon, as if, oh, it's another boogeyman that we've got to get rid of. When Trump was getting elected, the dean of a prestigious journalism school, I know I talked to one of his students, a graduate student, said the dean got together with his graduate students and said, don't worry, we're going to Watergate him. That means they're going to Watergate Trump, and they tried that with the Russian collusion stuff, and to a certain degree it worked. They wounded him quite a bit. So once you have a deceitful media, then you see what's going to happen, and Trump scares them. Trump scares people like the Post and the Times and all their acolytes, and so they're redoubling their efforts. It's going to be, it gets worse every time. 2020 was worse than 2016. 2024 will be worse even yet.
John, I'd like to rely on your experience as both a federal prosecutor and a litigator. These gag orders that we're seeing, Judge Merchan in New York, other judges have placed gag orders on Donald Trump, and yet the people prosecuting him appear to be violating the ethical canons of prosecutors by speaking out the way that they have. The witnesses have been allowed to basically get their testimony out in the media before they've even been sworn in as a witness. And yet Donald Trump is being fined $1,000 per tweet, even if it's not something he wrote. He's just reposting something. And now today we have James O'Keefe's revelation that they were using FISA against him all along and that they continue to monitor him. What's the legality of these? What's the legality of these gag orders? And can he take advantage? Can the Trump team take advantage of New York's interlocutory appeal process to get them removed?
Well, you know, a couple things. There's a lot to unpack there. I do think the gag orders are unconstitutional. How can you do that? How can you take away the right of somebody to talk about his case? Now, normally, a defendant is well advised to keep his mouth shut, and every criminal defense lawyer says that. But nonetheless, this is a tradition. I was a prosecutor in San Francisco. It was normal to have protesters outside the federal building talking about how innocent their client is. And making all kinds of statements. Think about the Black Panthers and what they said, and Bobby Seale, and so forth and so on. It's and that's fine. That's fine. That's an American tradition. You should be able to do that. Now let me also say this: it is the defendant's right not to be in court. It's a good idea to be in court, but the defendant can waive his presence. The judge is making him attend and graciously giving him one day off for Barron's graduation. But the fact is, Trump should be able to waive that requirement, and he can. And there are Supreme Court decisions that say that a guy can flee after the first day. If the defendant doesn't want to be there, he can flee to Mexico. The trial still goes on. So that, to me, shows that the judge doesn't want him out there campaigning. That's what bothers me. It's not like he's doing it for purposes of an orderly courtroom. And it is unconstitutional, in my view, not to let a person speak out, especially when other people are speaking against him. Another problem here is that the defendant has a Sixth Amendment right to have a fair trial, which means no unnecessary publicity and so forth. So this case shouldn't even be held in New York, where everybody has an opinion already and everybody's read this stuff. But given the fact that there's been so much pretrial publicity and publicity during the trial talking about Trump's guilt, how can you hamstring him and keep him from talking? He ought to be able to speak out. Now, by the way, the prosecution can cross-examine on him on those things, and that's why defense lawyers usually don't like their clients to do it. But Trump's not afraid of that.
Yeah, clearly he's not. And what do you make of this? I feel like we're in a very dissonant situation, just as, you know, a sandwich-eating American, when I look and I see that President Biden looks like an utter disaster. You know, people don't like him on either side. Like, any appreciation for this guy seems to be media only or paid influencers. But at the same time, we've seen all the get Trump comments. We're never going to allow Trump in. You know, I just find it odd that, like, these are our two candidates, and the, you know, the state apparatchiks, the deep state, whatever you want to call it, the wielders of lawfare, the Democrats, are going to do anything to stop him from becoming president. Yet there's no interest in Joe Biden as a president. I mean, where do you think this is all going to land, sort of nationally and presidentially?
That's what's terrible about it, is because anybody with common sense sees that this guy is a vulnerable person. He's really not there. He's your doddering uncle, where you'd be really discussing whether you should go to an old folks home. That's really where he is now. Should mom put him away for a while? And that's really the discussion. And you talked about influencers. That's really the best name for the mainstream media. They're really paid influencers. That's all they're trying to do. They're not trying to report facts. They're trying to influence the public. And so everybody can see it. Everybody can see what's happening. There are all these meetings going on, apparently reliably reported that there's all sorts of high and mighty people meeting every week to talk about Trump. It's very scary, because it's like there is a fairly monolithic conspiracy, which involves, by the way, the government. Not only are the agencies trying to surveil Trump, but there are all kinds of initiatives by Biden right now to change the voting laws, or to do various things regarding getting out the vote. Well, aren't those partisan? Aren't those partisan activities in the guise of government? So there are an awful lot of forces that are trying to get Biden elected, even though everybody with any common sense knows that this guy is not up to the task. It's all about power. People know he's incompetent, but all the goodies are over here. If you want goodies from the government, you put this guy in, and he's your best shot to get your goodies.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. Mitt Romney was correct, right? He got a ration of grief and calumny for telling the truth at a private fundraiser. And that's that, you know, as of 2012, 47%. Of the American people were dependent on the government for some subsidy or another. And once that tips over 50%, we've lost the republic. I think we're pretty close, if we're not already over it.
You know what I think? I was at a lunch with Ed Rollins around that same time. And Ed was very astute with the polling, and he came up with that same number. And I think Mitt Romney, I always thought he transposed some numbers. 47% of the people of the vote was more or less baked in for Democrats. You take, for instance, women 18 to 35 that are unmarried. There's a certain percentage of those, and it's a high one, that will always go for Democrats. 80-90% of the black vote always go to Democrats. You know, I think 4% out of 6% of the gay vote will go Democrat, so forth. And so, as Ed Rollins said, 47% of the electorate is already baked in for Democrats. And that was his position. And that's what I think Romney was referring to. It wasn't just government handouts. I think he was talking about the fact that there have been so many people that have been compromised. And I feel sorry for these young women. They think they understand contraception and abortion and so forth. And that's maybe a big issue for them. But the Democrats have just parsed out sort of special interest and put them all together, and they've got 47% in most elections. I hope with Hispanic voters now changing their tune and black voters changing them, you may not have 47 baked in anymore. It may be more like 42 or 43 or maybe even less. And so that's what I'm hoping, that we have a much freer election, and there's these groups that the Democrats are depending on are not as monolithic as they had been back when Mitt Romney talked about it.
Indeed, even young people, we're starting to see Gen Z waking up. Maybe it's because they had their senior athletic season stolen from them, their senior prom, their graduation. Now, in some places, they're getting their college graduation stolen from them. I think a lot of young people are starting to wake up and realize, wait a second, if I keep voting for the D, I'm never going to own a house.
That's right. Think about it. Think about what Biden's done to home ownership just in his few first days in office, where he did things that guaranteed inflation. I mean, this is no mistake. When this is happening, all the people who understood economics says, oh, well, he's causing inflation. And combined with government spending, combined with restricting drilling and leasing, you're going to double the price of oil immediately. And the other thing he did that was sort of unintended, he didn't think about this, but he also made Iran and Russia much richer and able to fight wars. And so we financed the war in Ukraine by raising the price of oil. We financed everything Iran has done by raising the price of oil and also removing sanctions. Then our prices are too high here, so we encourage Iran to pump more. We take away sanctions.
And it's a never-ending cycle. We're going to have to leave it there, John. And I don't know that Joe even thought about it, but the people that are running this administration certainly did. The book is Postgate, How the Washington Post Betrayed Deep Throat, Covered Up Watergate, and Began Today's Partisan Advocacy Journalism. John O'Connor, thanks so much. Stay tuned for more State of the Nation. Right.